Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello, this is the Tripe Supper with myself, Dom Shaw, Phil Talentire, who's eating saurine, or just about to finish his saurine.
Butter-free saurine, butter on it.
I know, I can do that.
You don't need butter on it.
No.
You're practicing for Brexit, aren't you?
yeah, this is my post-apocalypse diet.
You are a big saurine man. How many do you reckon you get through a week? A loaf a week?
I'll get through a loaf a week, yeah. It's a chocolate substitute.
Yeah, I hear you there. I'll tell you what it's an easy one for. If you're hungry at home,
yeah,
and you just need something to tide you over, that does a good job.
Or that post-lunch snack.
Yeah.
Yeah, where you normally reach for the Topic or Mars bar, you know, the chocolate bar of your choice.
I was reading last week that we didn't plan to start like this, but it's good to eat an apple half an hour before your dinner. Or your tea, or whatever, because it fills you up.
Right.
Something in it fills you up quicker. So I've tried it. I had an apple.
Does it work?
I don't know. I've had an apple before we've done this, and I'm going to have my jacket spuds with cottage cheese when we finish it.
So if you go halfway through,
I'll tell you
the
then,
yeah.
If you see me dipping into the tuck shop fridge for a Galaxy mid afternoon, you'll know it hasn't. Anyway, Darren Randolph. Let's talk about Darren Randolph, because everyone has been talking about Darren Randolph since his saves and his performance on Saturday. Ryan Shotton was excellent, wasn't he, talking about him, Vic? His quotes afterwards, I thought.
Yeah, absolutely gushing. And to be fair, I think most of the players are. They know exactly what he brings to the team. This year, I think, we've seen more of him because, obviously, he's been a bit more exposed. For the last 2 years, he's been behind a team that's been safety first and set up to defend and deny chances. This year's been a lot more open and he's been busier. And he's just as good. I mean, some of the saves are absolutely incredible. You wonder whether he is too good for this division, and should Borough go up, will they be able to keep hold of him? I know they did. Last year there was interest, which was knocked back very emphatically by the club. It might be hard to turn it down if the club are rebuilding on a lower financial base this summer.
There must be Premier League clubs who are looking now and thinking, £5 million's nothing, is it, in today's market, and thinking, you know, we missed a trick there too.
Yeah.
He's undoubtedly the best thing to come from that Gary Monk summer, isn't he?
Oh, unquestionably at the moment. You know, just in terms of consistency of performance, as you say, it fit into a lot of Premier League sides. His concentration levels are great. I mean, I always regard a good keeper as one that can pull off that vital save after doing nothing for an hour. Yeah. You see them at the top level, don't you? You know, it's been the difference at somewhere like Liverpool, where they've gone from decent keepers to one of the best in the world, and the difference has been there for all to see.
I think the interesting thing is, I mean, there were Premier League clubs did come in for him, but he came to Borough because he wanted to play. He wasn't happy to go to a mid-table Premier League club and sit on the bench. He wanted to play, which I think says a lot about his mentality.
When I sat down with Danny Coyne a couple of weeks back, I said to him, you know, when you come in the summer, how do you sit down and think, how do I improve the best keeper in the division, who, you know, widely accepted to be the best keeper in the division? And he said that Randolph had came to him straight away and said, I want to work on my footwork, I want to work on playing the ball out with my feet, because he was well aware already, obviously, having known what Jonathan Woodgate's all about, of the way he'll want to play. So he said, really, it was easy for him. It was knocking at an open door with a keeper who wants to kind of work on those weaknesses.
And we've seen at Millwall, he did that. He came out and dribbled past one of them. And also shepherded the ball out.
In the second half, yeah, that can't have been easy for Coyne to watch. But the another constant theme is how good he is around the place, isn't he, with the likes of Pears and the others. I mean, he is it. Senior international now, first choice for Republic of Ireland, obviously it goes without saying. It's useful to have around the place, isn't he, as well as what he does on the pitch?
I think so. He seems very grounded and eager to pass his experience on, I think. And it's not just the keepers. I think he's good with the rest of the team as well. He quietly puts an arm around someone's shoulder and tells them, you know, chin up, you did well there today, or doesn't matter that you made a mistake, crack on with it. And he I think increasingly he's talking on the pitch as well. I don't think we saw that so much in the first year he was here. Maybe because the defence in front of him was so well organised and now he has to take a bit more responsibility. But you do see him pointing and shouting and occasionally bawling someone out.
Woody made a point saying that the other week, that he's asking more from his senior players, that, you know, we have lost, you know, you've got someone like Johnny Howson out injured, George Friend, people like that. You're missing senior pros. You need other people within the team to step up and take some ownership. So, yeah, good to see.
Where does he rank, Randolph, in terms of Borough keepers? And I'm, you know, kind of in the not so distant past and going way back.
Well, for me, Schwarzer was the best, and then you've got Pearcey, who was brilliant, and older people will tell you Jim Platt was brilliant. Between then, I think we've really had decent keepers without anyone being outstanding, apart from possibly Shea Given for 3 months when he was using his telekinetic powers to keep the ball out of the net. I think he's right up there. I don't think anyone would argue with that.
Phil? No, I agree. You know, Borough had some decent keepers. You wonder whether, you can't really say Borough had one of the top keepers. I don't think, you know. Schwarzer's had a great career. I was a big Mark Crossley fan, funny enough, when he came into the side. That old argument, just to dredge that one up a bit.
He was quality, wasn't he, when he was here?
He was far better than I expected him to be, because I wasn't a huge Mark Crossley fan, I've got to be honest, when he was signed genuinely as a support for Schwarzer, but when he came in the team, you know, I thought he was good as or not even better.
There was that run of clean sheets, wasn't there? There was a genuine case for him to keep his place.
I mean, McLaren said, Schwartz is my number one. He comes back in when he's fit. And fair enough, managers have to sometimes do that. But he certainly made a case. Obviously, Shea Given was good when he came here. I think some keepers are unlucky that Vic makes a really good point about how a team sets up. You know, so if you're a keeper, you want to play in a team that's organised by Aitor Karanka or Tony Pulis, because you're not going to have a great deal to deal with. Hopefully, you're going to have big centre-backs who command the area, so you don't have to keep coming out and grabbing high balls. You know, Jim Platt, Jim Platt was probably the first Borough keeper I saw. Jim Platt and Pat Cuff, people like that. Pearcey, you know, Borough had some decent keepers over the years. It's very rare that Borough had a really poor keeper. I'm struggling to think of one off the top of my head. They've always had some.
You think of one? Brad Jones?
Well, Brad didn't convince, did he? Let's face it.
I think Jones is one of those people.
And yet he had one of those careers that a lot of people would take your right arm off.
Yeah.
Jones was a second choice keeper, and he knew that. And when he came in as second choice keeper, he did well because he knew he was only there for a couple of games. But when he was the number one and the pressure was on, that's when he looked really, really fragile. So I think that's a mentality thing.
It's an interesting time that at the club, you know, just digressing very slightly, is that the old Turnbull-Jones debate.
Yeah, because I couldn't believe it.
Everybody outside the club, everybody, except Brad's parents probably, thought that Turnbull was the better shot. And yet you spoke to anybody within the club and they were convinced that Brad Jones was the keeper. And I suspect that's because, as Vic just said there, with the pressure off on the training ground, he probably pulled off worldies. And to be fair to him, there's times he got the old Gazette 3 stars because he made, you know, penalty saves, I think, at Old Trafford. I mean, given the award a couple of times. I think he made one at Plymouth when Borough famously won away under Gordon Strachan back in the day. I think he saved a penalty that day as well. So he clearly had something, but it's like anything, isn't it? It's like a lot of sportsmen, they can't deliver, you know, when under pressure. There's just some
can't. Is there a more recent echo there with Thomas Myers as well, who stepped in as second choice keeper and superb at Man United and Man City, but in the league you wouldn't have trusted him?
I quite liked it as well. You know, again we're digressing, but I remember that day. It was the Huddersfield match, wasn't it? Where I think he brought Dimmy in for that match and left Thomas Mahias out. And after the match, I always remember asking, I thought, you know, you made the change. Expecting to say, oh well, I was always planning to do that. And he said, you know, Thomas hadn't played well enough, so I'm giving somebody else a chance, and I admired him for that. Because a lot of managers wouldn't say that, wouldn't come out and say that. And going back to my point about playing in front of a back line, so you get someone like poor old Jason Steele, who I know a lot of fans have strong opinions about, but I do feel he was unlucky. I did too, and he came into a Borough team that was very shaky at the back. I don't think anyone would dispute that. You know, around the time when Moggers get to the end of Moggers' days, when the defence was starting to let him down a little bit for whatever reason, and the moment Aitor came in, he got sent off at Leeds, didn't he, and then injured. or roughly the same time, I forget the chronology, but and of course he was never really available after that, and that Aito obviously made a decision quite early on that he wasn't his cup of tea.
On the subject of Myas, I was talking to Danny Coyne about that, because the mindset of a second or third choice keeper has always fascinated me, because I think, you know, when there must be a stage, and they can't grow thinking, I want to be a second choice keeper when
I grow. Steve Harper all along,
so,
isn't it?
So at what stage does the mindset change to not necessarily accepting that, as in like, I'm happy with this, but accepting that that's what you've become? And then at the end of your career, you must look back and think, yeah, Steve Harper, brilliant, good goalkeeper, good top flight goalkeeper, certainly a, you know, excellent top end championship goalkeeper, and for whatever reason, you know, all those years. And Coyne said, you can never accept in your own mind that that's what you are, and you need to go into training every day thinking that this weekend is the chance you get your chance, which is this weekend will be the game when you get your chance. And I completely get that. But then equally, you know, it's human nature that Thomas Maynard goes into training this week, and he knows that likelihood is his next chance of playing is the FA Cup. And, you know, given we look at the bench, it's going to be Ainsley Pearce who plays for that, and Maynard will be on the bench for that. There is a, you know, the mindset changes from when you're 18 and 19, doesn't it? It's got to do.
I mean, football is, it's a wonderful lifestyle, and people obviously enjoy every aspect of going to work. And, I mean, Dimi arrived at the club basically to help out in training. You know, he was unemployed League One keeper who arrived to help out in training. And there are accidents of fate that suddenly catapult people into the team. I suppose you always have that in your mind. But at the same time, it's a good environment. If you love football and being around football, and that's part of the gig, then you take it. I mean, there's Mike Hooper, is it another one?
Well, a classic
20-year career and barely played a first-team match.
And when he did play, he struggled a little bit, didn't he? Because didn't he, Newcastle signed him from Liverpool, didn't they, as the number one? You know, Borough signed Gary Walsh, for example. I do think it's a strange mentality. And even just as a young player coming up, so you've got people like Ainsley Pearce and, you know,
Zach so Kennedy. Hard as a goalkeeper.
Yeah, what
there's
do you
only
do?
One,
you,
there's only
you
one.
You know,
position,
we saw it with Conor Ripley. You know, does he sit on the bench? You know, because at the end of the day, you know, poor old Darren Randolph could twist his ankle on Thursday morning, and you need another goalkeeper, and that's your chance. And it might be you might get a 6, 7, 8, 9 match run in the team, and then that's your opportunity. I think it's strange when you get somebody like the kid at Leeds, who's from round here. Burley Peacock Farrell, who was getting a game at Leeds quite a lot last season, and then now he's gone to Burnley, where you can't see, you know, they've got about 82 goalkeepers on the books at the moment, don't they? You can't see how he's going to develop his game at Burnley, and at the moment he's playing for Northern Ireland, so he's getting regular international football, but you can't think that's going to last forever if he's never played any senior football. So it is a weird one. I think there are we've all met keepers. I do think they're a different breed. They've got a different, they have a different way of, you know, presenting themselves. They seem more self confident. They seem as though they've got, you know, they're not as self reliant. They're not as reliant on coaches. There's a lot of stuff that they have to do themselves. You know, in terms of the routine, they put themselves through the drills. They have that strength of character to sit on the bench for 6 months or a year and then have to come straight in the team. So I do think that they're wired slightly differently to outfield players as well. And I suppose that comes from up being one of a kind in every team you are.
Randolph currently leads the way in our best signing of the last decade, Paul. Last time I checked, that was ahead of George Friend, who got my vote, and Grant Ledbetter, who got Andrew Glover's vote in the office. First of all, who would you say is the best sign of the last 10 years?
Well, I'd be inclined to say Grant, because that's the sort of player I like. No nonsense, get stuck in. But also, I thought he, not just as an individual, as a professional, I thought he was Aitor's representative on earth. And I think he was the one that made the whole philosophy and methodology work at Borough. I think managers need that. Managers need an evangelist in the dressing room that persuades the rest of the lads, this is working, knuckle down, do what you're told. And I think he did that in a really quietly understated way. And I don't think you can underestimate the value of Grant in that promotion team.
Phil?
Yeah, it's a difficult one. I think the two criteria, one sort of your best value signing, which was certainly something like, for me, George Friend, £100,000. He's given sterling service now since 2012 when he arrived at the club. Been a great individual on and off the pitch. Couldn't ask any more for him. I mean, in terms of money signings, obviously Darren Randolph's a great signing. You go back through it without going through every player that Borough has signed over the last 10 years. You know, you kind of forget some of the players who came in, you know, back end of Tony Mowbray's time. People like Albert Adoma for a million quid.
Yeah. He made
a contribution.
You could have voted for him.
Yeah, could have voted for him. You know, players like that. And then moving further forward, you know, some of the players I saw signed have been, you know, turned out to be good acquisitions as well. So,
but well, on that, the one name that crept up, and we did discuss putting him in but didn't, probably wrongly, was Gaston Ramirez with the loan brackets, like we did for Bamford. And, I mean, in terms of an impact in that second half of the season.
Well, I quantified it on Twitter, didn't I? I thought it was a very good loan signing, and I thought it was a disastrous permanent signing. And not necessarily for what he did on the pitch in that Premier League season, because up till Christmas he was arguably one of the most influential players. After Christmas he was a disgrace, frankly. But the fact that Borough knew he was hard work, they knew he was hard to handle, they knew he'd signed a pre-contract agreement, I think it was Penarol. They should have said at the end of that season, which I think some people within the club wanted to do, was to say, shake hands, well done Gaston, thanks for your contribution, good luck with the rest of your career, and we move on. And I think it was really, from what I understand, it was really Aitor who was determined to get him back. And you could understand why from a footballing perspective, because it was, you know, I remember that game at Arsenal, one of the best away performances Borough will put in for many, many years, you know, the nil little draw that they should have won, where Traore was outstanding, but so was Ramirez, as those two players who looked great on the break. You know, and you've got Negredo up front. That kind of a sign of what might have been with a little bit more bravery and a little bit more, I don't know, ambition that season. But for me, it quantified as a holding, for me, it was an absolute disaster.
That's why I didn't put him in, even though I probably should have done
it. It's also about the metrics as well, isn't it? I mean, you're measuring value for money and longevity and overall contribution. It's very hard when his real contribution came in the space of 3 or 4 months at a time when the rest of the team were motoring and there were so many elements. I can understand that people focused on him as an individual and he had sparks and stuff, but I don't think that had he not been there that team wouldn't have got promoted still.
That would be the counter argument, wouldn't it? That some people would say it. I mean, it's like the argument about whether you can class someone like Emerson as a Borough great, because again, when he was on in those, whatever it was, 6 month cameo, he was out, you know, there's times when you just took your breath away. But then you think, for me, a great signing's got to do it over a few seasons. If you want to be classed as a club legend or a great signing, you've got to do it for more than 6 months. You know, you've got to come back the next season and do it again. And that's just my personal viewpoint. Everyone's different.
And a great signing, you know, George Friend is a great signing. A couple of other names who were still at the club now, who we put in that poll, Adam Clayton and Danny Ayala, have they both been great signings when you look at their impact and their longevity?
Well, they're both part of the framework for the promotion side, and they were crucial players. So there's no question that they more than played their role in both the playoff push and the promotion push. Great value for money. There's still fixtures around which you would probably build the team today. So that means that they've certainly been very, very good signings. Great usually is associated with a couple of outstanding performances where you can say that is why someone's caught the eye. And I think if you do an unglamorous job, it's much harder to sell that.
Yeah, good solid buys, I would say. You know, you think they've been at the club quite a while. I don't think either of them has been any chew in terms of off the field, you know. You know, they both work hard for the team. Borough didn't have to break the bank. Although at the time there were relatively expensive signings for the division. And I know now 3 or 4 million quid nowadays in the Championships a drop in the ocean. But then when Borough were paying, I think was it $3 something for Danny Ayala or something?
No,
like
it was 350,000.
Was it? I thought it was more than that. Anyway, So if that's the case, then definitely the Ayala in particular is a fantastic bit.
Clem was a couple of mils.
Yeah, I think
Clem was a couple lots of million. Options. So yeah. We never really know.
So much. Yeah, well in that case, obviously someone like Danny, who didn't even cost a great deal of money, has been a terrific acquisition.
I put Adama Traore in purely because for a few months he was brilliant to watch. He ensured that fans probably didn't have to watch what they watched last year because Pulis had an out ball for 6 months, and because they made what £10 million profit.
Yeah, that's an interesting way of looking at it, just in terms of the money ball aspect, if you like. But I mean,
it wasn't what Burra needed at the time.
There was moments when he was doing really flashy guitar solos, and that was eye catching. And as Phil said, it was at a time when much of the football was very very dull, so he catches the eye, and there's no question he's a hugely exciting to watch when he got on the ball, but there will always be questions over his end product.
Well, I would say when you judge someone like Adama, you know, I mean, let's not forget how young he was when he came. Was he 20, 21, something like that? I think the way I would judge it is that everybody knew that summer that Burra needed somebody on that side of the pitch who could play every week, who could. You know, we'd had Christian Stuani being playing there a little bit, hadn't we? The other players had been tried on the right hand side of midfield, and it was accepted that it's probably a position that Burra's still struggling to fill from time to time. So I understand why Traore might have been a player Burra would want to sign at some stage, but his arrival still left a gap because he just clearly, it was a huge ask for him to come into the team and hit the ground running. And you know, Burra needed somebody for 38 Premier League games who could, you know, could come in the team and do that job. So for me, that's why he wasn't a great signing, in as much as it didn't fill a gap, that a role that was needed filling. But there were some memorable moments, and as you say, financially, Burra did really well out of it. I still remain unconvinced that sort of give it to Adama was the panacea that everyone claimed.
It did make Burra very easy to play against.
It gave the fans some excitement because he's dynamite to watch when he's in full flow, and he certainly helped Burra get points that the maybes wouldn't have got at some stage in the second half of that season. But Burra looked towards the end of that season like they'd been worked out, and they barely laid a glove on Villa in those two playoff matches, didn't they? So it made Burra very predictable. And you know, it was give it to Adama, for me, that second half of that season saw Stuart Downing's influence diminish, because of the first half of that season, when he came back from the cold after, you know, we thought he was going to go to Birmingham, for me he was probably the best attacking player in the team. And then for the second half of that season, he became kind of, well, get the ball to Adama, we don't really want to get Stuart on the ball.
I think it's hard to say that Adama was a great player, because everyone would admit that he was nowhere near the finished product.
And still isn't.
We didn't see that. I mean, there was an irony in that he was by far and away the fastest player on the pitch, and yet he slowed the game down, because he would go whizzing off down a blind alley, then have to wait for everyone to get back in alongside him. And ironically, that gave the defence time to get organised as well. But fantastic to watch, absolutely brilliant to watch, and hugely exciting. And it's not often you see a crowd actually get to its feet with bated breath, waiting for the explosion. And you know, that, you know, you'll never forget that. But in terms of end product, I don't think he really delivered enough to be called a great.
And I hope I'm wrong, but I think people will still have this conversation about him in 3 or 4 years' time, because I don't think. And I know he's been tried in a couple of different positions now down at Wolves, but he's still really seen as the same, an impact player. I'm not sure whether the penny will drop with him that he needs to add more to his game or to do something slightly different. But it could be that he just never kicks on from being that hugely explosive player who doesn't produce enough in the final third often enough. Because if he does produce in the final third, he'll be playing for Real Madrid or Barcelona.
From the past to the present, then, in Cardiff this weekend, and been reunited with Aidan Flint first. Well, a few, actually, because Joe Bennett's
old boys network.
Yeah, Lee Tomlin, Isaac Vassell, who Burra were interested in, Robert Glatzel, who are watching Heidenheim in the summer. We'll start with Flint. First things first, you know, don't concede a goal to him.
The irony
would be painful, wouldn't it, after last year's
goal scorer.
Yeah.
I think everyone's aware of that as well. And there was an irony that when he arrived at Borough, that's exactly what he was brought in to do. He was got on the end of dead ball specialist Tony Pulis's barrage at the far post, and yet, you know, he got his 50 pence head to it every week, and, you know, we had it on our save key, didn't we? Flint header glances above the bar.
There was that one, can't remember.
Early on, it was the first home game.
No, I thought it was one of the season when he missed.
Yeah.
I mean, he admits, didn't he? There was that interview in the summer. I can't remember.
Yeah, was
it with yourself?
Yeah.
Where he was up front.
He described it as diabolical.
Diabolical, yeah. Yeah, so, you know.
And he wasn't diabolical.
No, but there's no. But we didn't see, because, you know, when he signed, I remember thinking, fine signing. I know a Bristol City fan who used to love watching him at Bristol, was gutted to see him go. So, you know, you can't really judge him on last season.
One of the greatest mysteries of all time, isn't it, that a manager whose stock in trade is set-piece goals as much as anything in direct football can't get any more than a goal out of Aidan Flint.
But let's, you know, defensively...
Who scored nearly double figures the previous season. But defensively, I thought it was solid enough.
I was going to say, because he had the best defensive record in the league.
But we're joint best defensive...
I think in terms of your average championship match where the ball's going to get knocked into the box, he was fine. He could head it away, he'll hoof it away. He's a big handful. He could more than handle the biggest centre-forward in the division. He wouldn't have suited this season's style and playing it out from the back, because he's not comfortable with it at his feet. On paper... he should have been a perfect fit for Borough. In terms of the free kicks, I think it has to be pointed out that he got 9 goals at Bristol from dead balls, but I think 8 of them were his feet. Everyone thinks it was all just the headers, and it wasn't. He at Bristol, he used to like hang back.
Good feet for a big man.
Well, he used to dive into the carnage and barge people out of the way and poke it home. And for Borough, he was the target. People used to aim at him and expect him to hit the target from a header, and he just wasn't doing it.
I don't think Borough failed to go up last season because of Aidan Flint.
No, of course not. God, no.
You know, that was there's structural problems in the team that were nothing to do with him. I think.
But was it the move in the summer? It struck me as being the right move for everyone.
Absolutely,
involved.
It ticked all the boxes.
Yeah, Borough overpaid for him in the first place, in my opinion. But when you know when the opportunity arose to allow him to move on, it was good for him, it was good for Burren, it was probably turned out to be pretty good for Cardiff as well. Burren got the thick end of the money back, didn't they, pretty much. Sometimes it happens in football, sometimes you sign a player and it just doesn't work out for whatever reason. I think if he'd stayed, he'd have probably played quite a bit, because Burren have had problems at the back in terms of injuries. I get the idea that he maybe wouldn't necessarily fit the style of play as such, but Burr aren't playing it out the back like Man City played out the back. It's getting forward a little bit more quickly than that most times. I think that's what Woody wants. I don't think he wants necessarily Burr to be very sort of ticky-tacky, slow, play it around at the back and then break. It's more about getting on the front foot and playing, getting the ball forward as and when's necessary. And he said all along, hasn't he? He said, I'll do what's best in that particular moment. He doesn't want to be stuck with the philosophy and then, you know, find that the team just get obsessed with it to the point where they can't adapt on the pitch.
Tomlin, it's good to see, I know he didn't play last week, so he'd been involved in the car accident, but it's good to see him.
Insert your own metaphor here.
Yeah, but it's good to see him having been involved, isn't it? Because he spoke openly and publicly and bravely about the tough times he's had in the summer when he went to Peterborough on loan last year as a way just to kind of get out and get away from things, really, and enjoy his football again. We don't know whether he'll play. Be good to see Glatzel up front again. Hopefully he won't go on a rampage like he did in the summer. We were talking about this yesterday with Phil. I fancied Cardiff in the summer. I thought they, of the teams who've come down, were most likely to go straight back up, but they've had a bit of a mixed start. I was reading they've only won 2 games, and they were 88th minute and 96th minute winners, one of which was scored by Vassell, who hasn't really had a kick since. But the pressure's on them, isn't it, this weekend?
I think so. I mean, one thing is, you know, it's part of the build-up to any match is you know what you're going to get with the Neil Warnock side.
Johnny Helson said it.
Which has its advantages, but also its disadvantages in that people do know what they need to do to stop them. So maybe that's a problem. Everyone was a bit surprised when they went up, if you remember. They weren't supposed to go up. They weren't amongst the fancy teams.
They weren't supposed to be in the top half, I'd say.
So maybe they're not that good a team, and they had a purple patch and Warnock did the job and got them promoted. Maybe they've changed style a little bit too much in the top flight and don't have the integrity that they had last time round. And also, it's a big mental adjustment. You know, teams that come down, it can be quite hard to get back into the championship rhythm. Interestingly, I think they've taken 7 out of their 9 points at home, which probably flags up where the problem is. Makes it obviously hard for Borough going there, but that's how their season's panned out so far.
Phil?
Yeah, I mean, I do think there's a factor of teams go up, and the way, especially a team like Cardiff, the way they got up, and I think it's probably similar to Sheffield United as well, they get up because everyone plays it, to dip into the cliche, big bag of cliches, 110% every week. They treat every game like a cup final. They play the, and I think there's an element of when players get up there, they probably start forgetting what got them there in the first place, and maybe start believing they're a little bit better than they are, and you, once you come back down again, it's very hard to lift it again. You know, and they've got new signings who've come in. You know, we saw it with Borough after relegation. It took some players still haven't got settled in yet. So there are a number of factors. Maybe it's has Warnock stayed a season too long? You know, his record's there for all to see, and it's very, very impressive. But he's getting on a bit. Has he still got the motivation to go again? And you know, Glatzel, there's lots of pressure on players, isn't there? You know, someone like Glatzel, it cost quite a bit of money. We know Borough were blown out of the water with his valuation. He hasn't really set the world on fire yet. So there's a lot of factors. But then again, you know, it looks at it from the outside, don't you? As a Borough team going there, you think, well, it's a game not to lose, rather than you thinking, well, Borough, you know, are odds on to win. It's a very hard game to call because I think both teams are very much in transition.
One thing's for certain, Neil Warnock will be talking Borough up after the game.
He loves the opportunity
to praise Borough. He was in charge of Rotherham, Rotherham game, wasn't
he? Loved that, didn't he?
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, he absolutely beamed in with a beaming smile.
Yeah. I
was
going
to say, little did we know.
It was 2 days before the war.
Yeah, all hell was breaking loose behind the scenes. But no, hopefully Borough continued their decent run of form. Should we finish with predictions? 0-0?
I think Borough get a point down there. Be brave to call it. I think Borough are still allowing teams too many attempts at goal, and you know, it's going to be hard to keep another clean sheet, but I don't see why they can't get a point down there.
They are starting to get a little bit of momentum, and that breeds confidence, and, you know.
Yeah, I think the first... I was worried again for the third or fourth home game in a row, the opposition, and I know Borough will be away from home at the weekend, so that changes things, but teams are getting too many pots of goal, which is one of the reasons why we're probably talking about Darren Randolph. But yeah, no reason. If they play like they did at Bristol City, they'll get a result.
Excellent. Thanks a lot, Phil. Thanks, Vic.